This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, the 1st of March 2012. I'm Iti Agnihotri Mazhokar. Coming up on today's show, a University of Arkansas Fort Smith professor analyzes what'll happen if we run out of oil, and a conversation with singer-songwriter Marshall Mitchell, who's set to play next in the Music on the Mountain series in Fayetteville. Support for KUAF comes from Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Art Series, which continues with the SF Jazz Collective plays The Music of Stevie Wonder on Thursday, March 15th at 7 p.m. This acclaimed jazz band will perform hits such as Superstition, Sir Duke, Do I Do, and more. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartcenter.org or 443-5600. But first, as warmer weather approaches, many might begin thinking of the opening of local farmers' markets or planting a garden of their own. A community event being held this weekend has the aim to encourage, inspire, involve, and educate people about local food systems. The second annual Dig In Food and Farming Festival begins tomorrow evening in Fayetteville. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas spoke with coordinators Charity Lewis, Lee Wilkerson, and Sherry LaRue earlier this week. They began their conversation by stressing the important place that local foods have in a community.
Local food is, to me, one of the most exciting activisms, if you will, that I've ever discovered. This is Lee. It's all good, basically. Literally, it tastes good, but it's also great for a community. It builds capacity in terms of local farmers. It supports the families of local farmers, and it creates a connection of people and events and neighborliness that it's hard to find in any other thing.
Charity?
Food. We all have to have it. It's a common denominator, and by buying locally for our food, we are supporting our local farmers, which in turn can give us more local food, which is better for us and continues to grow our community.
You guys are farmers? Yeah?
I have Chicken Moon Farm here in Fayetteville, and I grow broilers, or meat chickens, and I have free-range chickens running around my farm that lay beautiful eggs, which I also sell, and I currently am growing pigs, and we'll have pork, and also have honeybees.
I'm Sherry LaRue from Green Fork Farm, and we have dairy cows in our backyard and have our own milk and make cheese. We also sell beef and pork and chicken, and all of our animals are treated with respect, and we have a partnership with those animals where we give to them and they give to us, and that's why we're doing it.
Awesome.
And what's great, this is Lee. I'm a gardener. I grow lots of food, but I keep it all for myself. The great thing about having farmers like Sherry and Charity and those at Wren's Winter Market and the Fayetteville Farmers Market is you really get to know people. You get to know what is in season, what's available. There's so much stuff we can grow year-round here in unheated greenhouses, and there are lots of people growing it. The more people that support local food, the more opportunities like that we're going to have.
Part of this dig-in festival is to raise awareness of more local farmers.
Absolutely. There are actually farmers are everywhere. And as you get to know them, one of the neat things is you find out what they're growing. And I know that what I grow and what farmers are growing has actually changed the way I cook. Actually, it started me cooking, which my spouse is really happy about, that you eat in season. And some of the fruits and vegetables that you get, you're like, wow, you know, what do I do with 5 gallons of blackberries? And so you discover all these recipes, and it leads down this whole road of exploration and also connecting with people.
We will have at the festival an information fair where some of our local farmers will be. Some of them will not have tables because they're going to be teaching classes and helping us to connect with local people. So I think everywhere you turn around at the festival, you're going to be meeting a farmer or someone who could help you learn about growing your own food.
I would love to be able to do it. I mean, I even have a greenhouse that's attached to my house that is empty.
Lucky you.
And I don't know. You know, when I first moved into my house, I put my house plants out there and almost killed them. So now that I'm kind of like, okay, what do I do? But is that, that's part of this festival as well, right? Just a... You, if I come, you can teach me?
Well, I can't, but we have farmers who can. We have two farmers, local farmers, Calvin Bay and Patrice Gross, are going to be teaching some growing classes, gardening classes. Also, there's a beginning. This one might be for you. The beginning backyard gardening and composting is going to be a good class. And there is nothing like learning to grow food in your backyard that will give you a respect for what farmers do.
The other thing is that the films that we've chosen are very inspirational. So I think if you have that empty greenhouse in your backyard or you have that lawn in your front yard that can be converted into growing food, come and see the films, because the films tell you that anybody can do it.
One other thing I'd like to stick in here is the Fayetteville Community Garden Coalition will be holding their annual seed swap. And so not only can you learn how to grow a few things, but you can grab a few free seeds. And if you have any old seeds or from last year left over that you don't need all of, you can bring to the swap and trade them out with somebody. Learn about their seeds and how they grew them and what they liked about that plant and so forth. So you have an opportunity to actually take home something to start right away.
Another part of this, there are going to be a couple of local chefs as well. You mentioned earlier cooking in season, and there are going to be some chef demonstrations.
We're going to have two chefs, Chef Tuesday Eastlack and Chef David Lewis, who will do cooking classes and show people how to cook from local seasonal food. We will also be featuring lots of food from local restaurants and businesses who are sponsoring the festival. So we'll have food at the festival for people to try from BHK Cafe, Greenhouse Grill, Lean Green Cuisine, Little Bread Company, Ozark Natural Foods, Arcega's Espresso Cafe is providing coffee all day. We have a lot of opportunities for learning and for getting involved and trying the things that we have available locally and meeting up with those local resources.
I'm going to take that. To me, that's a great point to jump in. A part of this that, strangely, the economics of all this is really exciting. And that, you know, so communities have been through so much with the economy in the past few years. And there's all this great research about buying local and how what a bigger impact for the better it makes on our community to buy local. Well, if you do the numbers for our population here, then a 20%, if we bought 20% of our food locally, it would have a $100 million impact every year on our community. And to me, that's really cool because it can bring in people that are doing this for different reasons. Maybe a person's not that concerned about the environment, but they want a strong local economy. And maybe they want to buy their food from farmers that are not subsidized. You know, so you can really get a wide array of people that can get behind this, and that's one of another neat connection to me.
It's a really big impact.
So at Dig In, we will have an opportunity for anyone attending to sign up for their 10% local pledge, and we will have a sign-up list, and we'll keep you updated by email on tips and so forth, and even give you a little magnet to take home to put on your refrigerator to remind you to shift 10% of your budget to local.
And it's a very cool magnet that you get to remind you to stick on your fridge. And it says transition 10% local food pledge. And it helps. It gets to be a habit, a really fun habit, you know, you start to cook and you're like, okay, what part of this meal am I going to get locally? And it's like a game. It becomes a fun thing. And then, you know, then you find yourself not just satisfied with 10%. Then you're like, can I go another 10? You know, can we produce a totally local meal on a summer day? And it gets to be a really fun endeavor.
And when Lee mentioned the game of it, and it does become one of those personal challenges. But to bring a little different look at it, it does become a game with your children and your family. And so what happens, and I've seen this in some of my other friends' families is it starts to be a discussion around the dinner table about where everything on the plate came from. And it doesn't have to be completely local. I mean, you know, you can shop at Walmart. That's okay. We're not finding fault with that. But every little bit you do makes a difference.
I just want to say one of the things I'm really excited about is how this festival, the Dig In Food and Farming Festival, it's something that allows you to let what you love lead you. It's not guilt. It's not because it's bad for you. It's not because it's going to harm the environment. It is because you love good food. You love having farms in your community. You love learning to cook from a good chef. You love growing your own backyard food. All those things. It's really wonderful to have something where it's all about what you love.
Dig In Food and Farming Festival will open to the public at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow evening at the University of Arkansas Global Campus for the first film of the event. A ticketed opening reception will be held at 5 p.m. at the Fayetteville Town Center. The festival continues Saturday, March 3rd at 9 a.m. Dig In is a nonprofit community endeavor funded by donations. Weekend passes for supporters are available at the door. Classes and films are offered by donation with $5 suggested per event. Information fair, seat swap, and panel discussion are free. More information available at diginfestival.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Mutholkar, and with me on the phone from his office in Fort Smith is Michael Tilley with TheCityWire.com, the news service that covers culture, politics, business, and more for the entire KUAF listening area. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I like that point about it, the entire. We do cover the entire area.
You do.
Finally.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you.
Now, we have all kinds of good news today, but let's start with the not-so-great reports that we've encountered in the past week. Now, this report deals with the Bureau of Labor Statistics report that said that Arkansas and Mississippi were the only two states to see an increase in their 2011 average unemployment rate.
Correct. You know, it's like we talked about just a few minutes ago. The reports we're getting on the economy, both from the government and private sector, continue to fuel that uncertainty. I mean, we get a report that says things are looking up, and then we get a report that says not so much. But yes, the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported Wednesday that Arkansas and Mississippi saw their average annual jobless rate increase. So only two states. Arkansas moved up from 7.9% average in 2010 to 8%. It wasn't much of a jump, but to be two of 50 states to go up is disconcerting, discouraging possibly. And we also, unfortunately, had an increase in the number of mass layoff incidents. Mm-hmm. And that's when there are at least 50 people who lose a job for more than 31 days. And in 2011, there were 154 of those, compared to 71 in 2010, compared to 117 in 2009. So in the last 3 years, this most recent year had the most mass layoff incidents. But then, you know, we come back to some government reports. For example, also on Wednesday, the GDP numbers came out, and it showed a somewhat healthy gain in the GDP. Is a 3% gain for the fourth quarter of 2011 compared to 2.3% in 2010. So that's a good report. And then we follow that with the American Trucking Association. They put out their index. They track freight tonnage, which is a great barometer of economic health, because before goods are either produced or sold, they have to be trucked. And the trucking index fell 4% in January. So, you know, that's not good news. But then the credit index was up in February, which is good news. But consumer debt, then there's mixed emotions on consumer debt. Hmm. Like we said, all of these different reports continue to create uncertainty about the health of the economic recovery. So, you know, uncertainty is the key point.
Let's move on to some numbers, some solid numbers. Sales tax collections are up.
Yes, in both Northwest Arkansas and in the Fort Smith region, tax collections are up. For example, in the five Northwest Arkansas cities, Bentonville, Rogers, Siloam Springs, Fayetteville, and Springdale, there's a collective 9.4% increase in the January report. That's healthy. A big chunk of that, Bentonville, was up 39.5%. Officials there credit that to the increase in visitors from Crystal Bridges. But, I mean, those are good, healthy numbers. I mean, that reflects that people are back spending. And remember, that's what this economy needs. It needs people to spend, both locally, state, and nationally. And in the Fort Smith region, or in the city of Fort Smith, its 2011 tax collections were up 3.9%. And so that's a good report for the area. And several counties were up. Crawford County, I think, was about the only county to see a decrease, and it was a very slight decrease. But Franklin, Logan, and Sebastian all saw increases in their countywide sales tax collections. So that is a good sign. And that was one area that began to improve last year, and it's been consistent. So that's one area where we should really keep our fingers crossed and hope that continues.
Now, coming up in 12 days is a vote on whether Fort Smith voters should consider a 1 cent tax extension that'll help the city fund its water system maintenance, provide funds for Parks Department, and build new facilities. How successful do you think this will be, considering the rejection of 1% prepared food tax last year by voters?
Right, that's a great question. I think historically Fort Smith voters have overwhelmingly approved sales tax increases or extensions to support critical infrastructure projects. And most of this election is about that. It's refinancing bonds for the water and sewer system upgrades. By the way, upgrades that are mandated, required by the Department of Justice, EPA. So I don't see a problem with that passing. The problem I see is the part of the election that has to do with the aquatics facilities and ballparks. I don't have a feel for that, to be honest with you. I still get the impression that folks aren't convinced it's needed, that they haven't been convinced it's yet necessary. I talk to a lot of people who say that'd be nice, but I just don't know if we can afford it right now. So that's going to be the interesting part of this election.
Also, what's the latest on the removal of the A-10 fighter mission from the 188?
Well, it's ongoing, I guess is the best word. Just a couple days ago, six members of Arkansas's congressional delegation sent a fairly frank letter to Secretary of Defense Panetta asking for some questions. I mean, their letter, if you read between the lines, they suggest that they suggest a couple of things, or they suggest a lot of things, but the two primary is that the Air Force unfairly cut missions and planes from the reserves side compared to the active duty side. And secondly, even in those cuts, they didn't fully measure the most efficient use of resources, because people with the 188th and the Community Council here in Fort Smith, they maintained that because the unit is so close to its range. I mean, their firing range is there at Fort Chaffee was just, when you're flying several hundred miles an hour like you are in A-10, I mean, you're, by the time you take off, you're almost over your range. So that's very efficient. So they've asked some pointed questions, and they've asked Secretary Panetta to have a response no later than March 12th.
Thank you so much, Michael.
All right. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. Michael Tilley is the editor with thecitywire.com, the news service that covers culture, politics, business, and more for the entire KUAF listening area. It's Thursday, the 1st of March, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Madholkar, and with me are two very special guests. The first is Becca Bacon-Martin, the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, and my special guest, Ann Bernard Grajeda, who is here to tell me about VeggieTales.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Antoinette is here as a special guest because I said we're going to talk about VeggieTales, and Izzy looked at me and blinked.
Yes, sorry. I don't know about that, but Antoinette does, so I brought her in.
I don't know that I know much, but I am familiar.
Okay, do you know this? Larry the Cucumber could have been Larry the Chocolate-Covered Nougat Bar.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not kidding you. When they were trying to draw these characters, they needed characters that were hairless, needed no costumes, and were limbless.
Right.
Didn't have arms and legs. And so they had drawn a candy bar.
That's funny.
And Phil Vischer's wife walked by, saw it on the computer, and said, I don't think that moms will be happy with good morals coming out of a candy bar.
We should probably back up and explain to Ithy now.
Yes.
What VeggieTales are. Hit it.
VeggieTales is a collection of short movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's animated, and the stars are obviously vegetables.
Larry
so
the
cucumber.
Cucumber and Bob the tomato.
Yes, okay. And they teach children good lessons, good moral lessons.
And I got to talk to Mike Naraki, who is the voice of Larry and one of the founders.
Oh, fun.
So much fun. It was back in the 80s when computer animation was brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were trying to do this computer animated cartoon. And it actually turned out to be the first series released to DVD that was totally computer animated.
Really? I didn't know that.
They met doing puppet ministry and decided they wanted to do something for kids that had both the biblical morals they wanted to teach and was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And what's more fun than Paw Grape and Junior Asparagus? And
yes.
Yeah, they really are a lot of fun. And they are on a new tour called God Made You Special. It's about the Silly Song Warehouse where there's a song gone missing. And you get to hear favorite songs like the Hairbrush song.
That's my favorite.
My daughter loves the Hairbrush song. And considering that by that point her dad had no hair, he was so not amused. So not amused. Showtime is 2 o'clock Saturday at the Fort Smith Civic Center. That's at 55 South 7th. Don't go to the convention center. Tickets start at $16, and you can find out more at Hannah House Arc, H-A-N-N-A-H, House, ARK.com.
Thank you, Antoinette, and thanks, Becca. Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oh, where is my hairbrush? Oh, where is my hairbrush? Oh, where...
KUAF is supported by Fayetteville Athletic Club, offering guidance to fitness and healthy living through support, education, and positive direction. Information regarding the FAC's 9-acre facility, including tennis, aquatics, city hiking trails, and more, is available at fayac.com or 587-0500. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Ithi Agnihotri Madholkar. This Monday, Dr. Eric Baker, an assistant professor of political science at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith, will give a talk titled The End of the Oil Age, Peak Oil and Its Ramifications on the UA Fort Smith campus. As a political scientist, Baker's research interests have always leaned toward energy and environmental policy. His interest in oil demand and supply and how oil shapes geopolitics was first peaked back in the 1970s when the first oil shocks occurred. He finally started digging deeper 6 years ago. We started the conversation by discussing what the term peak oil means.
Well, peak oil is simply the peak at which production levels off and then starts to drop down. So it has nothing to do with the total amount of oil that's in the ground. It has to do with flow rates. It has to do with our ability to pump enough gas at prices we're willing to pay in enough quantities to serve our needs.
So what is the current status of oil production and consumption in the world? A lot of literature that I read said that most of the world's oil-producing nations hit peak back in the 1960s and 70s, and we're expected to be in acute shortage by 2020. Is that correct?
Is that, you know, the estimate of when this would actually occur is different. But for the past 4 years or so, global production of conventional oil has been on a plateau. Now, you're right to say that American production peaked in 1970, and that was predicted by a fellow by the name of King Hubert, who worked for Shell Oil, who said, well, about 1970, American production would peak in the lower 48, and that occurred. Now, there are other wells that are out there or fields that are beginning to peak or have peaked. The Cantarell Peak, Cantarell Field in Mexico has peaked and is going down. North Sea is going down, and Prudhoe Bay is going down and in decline. So right now we're trying to play catch-up to provide enough oil for us to keep our lifestyle going.
What role does oil supply play on the world's geopolitical stage?
Oh, it's huge. It's definitely huge. You may be familiar that right now there's tensions in the Middle East. Certainly the confrontation with Iran is important. About one-fifth of the oil that flows to the rest of the world goes through the Straits of Hormuz. Iran has threatened to close that if they're attacked by Israel or the United States. So it's a huge, huge factor. And, of course, back in the 1970s, the oil shocks were caused by OPEC saying, well, we don't want to sell oil to the United States anymore. And so it plays a very huge role in geopolitics.
So is underplaying this imminent shortage a necessity to avoid worldwide panic or a strategy on the world's government's part to keep people from voting them out?
Well, that's a very good question. I mean, you have to understand the role that oil plays in modern civilization. It's a crucial, crucial resource. It makes everything else go, really. And so, I was just reading an article right now about the head of the U.S. Geological Survey basically downplaying peak oil. But when she was asked a question about, okay, why are prices so high, she basically dodged it. She didn't answer the question. And so in terms of panic, I don't know if that would cause a panic, but certainly would cause some effects on the economy, I think. We as Americans don't like to be told that, maybe something that we have become accustomed to, may not be there anymore. I mean, Jimmy Carter paid a high price for that back in the late 1970s, and he lost the election to Ronald Reagan.
Now, we in North America are banking on oil from tar sands in Canada to become more self-reliant, whereas experts have already pointed out that more oil would be wasted than is expected to be extracted while carrying out those operations. Why is there this fog of misinformation around this issue?
Well, one thing I think that a lot of people really don't understand the issue, when you're talking about tar sands in Canada, they actually have to cook the sand in order to get the oil out. And, of course, that requires a lot of natural gas. In fact, I was looking at one estimate that 25% of Canadian natural gas goes to actually produce oil from tar sands. And so the price of that oil is going to be very high. And, there's a notion called energy input versus energy output. And there are those people who believe that, we're going to put so much energy into getting those tar sands cooked and the oil out, then we'd actually get out in return. So,
in the press release for your event, you say that if the loss of oil does occur, there will be some real problems. What are these real problems?
Well, let's go back to the 1970s. In the 1970s, there was no real cutoff completely of oil from the Middle East. It was only about 5 to 7%. But look what happened here in the United States. We had, several recessions during the 1970s. We had gas, at least the threat of gas rationing. We had people stealing oil. That's the reason why, cars sold today have a little latch inside as opposed to outside to get the oil. And you just had some major, major hardships in terms of the economics of the situation. Now, today, in many respects, we are more dependent on oil than we ever were. I mean, look at our cities, look at our food production, et cetera. You know, food, for instance, requires about 10 calories of energy for every one calorie it produces. And where is that energy coming from? Oil. And so you can also see that prices would go up. There's some very, very intelligent people who are saying that this past recession that we have in, we've been through, the Great Recession, was triggered in part by the rise in oil prices back in 2007. And so you can imagine what may happen. Right now, oil is trading at about $107 a barrel. And if you're looking at European crude, it's $120. What's that going to do for our economy? I mean, there's some real, real fears that we could be heading back into another recession because of the rise in oil prices.
So is there no sustainable solution? Should we cue panic?
I don't think we should panic. I think that we need to be thoughtful. I think that we need to adapt. First of all, not look at this as something that's the end of the world or anything like that. This is not, you know, 2012 apocalypse or anything like that. But I do think we need to adapt, perhaps drive less, and accept that the oil age as we know it, where we had plenty of cheap oil, may be very well coming to an end.
When you talk about the shortage of oil in the world, you have to talk about the alternative energy sources.
Right, absolutely.
Are they enough to, you know, sustain us for the next couple of hundred years?
Well, it depends what you're talking about. Several different kind of resources here. Let's take a look at biofuels, for instance. It's been in the news a lot about producing ethanol from American-grown corn. Now, the problem with that is that, first of all, a gallon of ethanol does not have the same energy content that a gallon of gasoline. You can't go as far on a tank of ethanol as you can on a tank of gasoline. In addition to that, of course, you're giving over precious farmland to produce something you're going to burn in your car and not in your stomach. And that will drive up food prices right there. You could possibly produce oil from coal. Now, you know, depending on the estimates you hear, we have 200-300 years of coal left. Yeah, but if you start turning that coal into oil, that resource is probably going to, you know, last only 20, 30, 50 years. It depends on what, how much you are producing. And there are other things that people have talked about, cellulosic technology, where you produce essentially a fuel from, you know, I don't know, leaves and twigs and things like that, basically harness the, you know, the ability of termites, you know, termites eat wood, and they produce fuel from that. Well, there's talk about that, but that has yet to be perfected and certainly not up to the scale that we need. So, you know, there are no real good alternatives right now. What we're talking about with peak oil is a liquid fuels problem. It's not an energy problem. It's not an energy crisis. You know, nukes are fine in the sense that they produce a lot of electricity, but we don't need electricity to run our cars unless you want to convert every car to electricity. And there are 230 million vehicles on the road. You know, what are you going to do?
What are the topics that you hope to cover in your talk on Monday?
Well, first of all, I want to press on people how important oil is to our life. I mean, I've seen estimates of 6,000 different products that we enjoy every day are due to oil. We cannot take it for granted like we have in the past. Second of all, I will introduce the notion of peak oil, what it means, what it is not. You know, it's definitely not the end of oil. I mean, there's plenty of oil out there. The question is, to quote Jeff Rubin, who is a former head of economics in the Canadian Imperial Bank, his argument is that it's going to be too expensive to burn. And we cannot accept, you know, a situation where we waste energy. And then after that, we'll talk about possible ramifications, wild cards. You know, what would happen if you know, the Middle East is going to continue to blow up like it is right now. What would happen if, for instance, a terrorist would strike a refinery in Saudi Arabia? Unrest, possible unrest in Saudi Arabia. I mean, that would be a massive, massive blow to the oil prices that we know. And then talk about possible solutions and what we can do about it.
Dr. Eric Baker is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Arkansas, Fort Smith. He will present his talk, The End of the Oil Age, Peak Oil and Its Ramifications, in the Gardiner Building Lecture Hall on the UA Fort Smith campus this Monday at 7 p.m. The lecture talks about the depletion of oil and what the United States can do about it. The event is free and open to the public. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar, and with me in my studio is Jody Vizaska, Vice President of Communication with Walter Knott Center.
Hello.
Hello.
Happy March.
Happy March to you, too.
March 1st. Can't believe it.
Yes.
Is it officially spring?
See, I cannot make up my mind if this is spring or
just
still winter,
really,
or just
winter.
A phase that'll pass soon.
Let's hope it's spring.
Yes.
I hope it's spring. So we are extremely busy at Walton Arts Center these days. We have a really great busy weekend coming up. We have the final weekend of Theater Squared's Tigers Be Still performance. That's been running for 4 weeks, so there's no more excuses if you haven't seen it. It runs all weekend. It is a wonderful play. Very well done. Very professional. It's a dark comedy, so it has some really funny moments, but it also has some really real, emotional, interesting issues that the characters are dealing with. So
you plan to go this week?
So. I think I will go and see it again.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think it'll be. I think it's worth seeing again. I saw it the opening weekend, and hopefully, lots of people will, you know, decide to come out and see it this weekend. So that runs through Sunday the 4th. But before we finish with Theater Squared at Walton Arts Center on Friday, we will have Tia Fuller, a jazz saxophonist, playing in the Starlight Jazz Club. That's a Friday evening performance. There are two performances, actually, 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. She is a young, amazing saxophonist who has played with Beyoncé. And so she was interviewed by Robert Ginsberg the other day, and she was talking about what she learned from performing with such an amazing performer. So you'll probably see some of those elements of high theatricality and really a lot of energy in engaging the audience with Tia on Friday. So that's Friday evening in Starlight Jazz Club. On Saturday, we will have a visit from Seth Rudetsky, who is the Broadway Sirius XM radio host. He's coming to introduce our new season to our subscribers.
Okay.
So if you're one of those wonderful folks out there who has purchased the 6-show Broadway package, which means you bought tickets to all of our Broadway shows, you should have gotten an invitation in the mail or in your email to come see Seth. It's a free performance. It's an invitation to our subscribers to come get a taste of what next season is going to look like.
What about people who haven't subscribed but are interested?
If you're interested, you can also sign up. We will, you know, we want as many people to see the season as possible.
Okay.
But we will have. Our goal of the event is to preview the season, but it's also to get our subscribers the chance to renew. And if you are really excited about it and you're interested in purchasing a subscription, we will take care of you and we'll get you taken care of.
Right.
But that's a 4:30 performance on Saturday. It's free. There's no cost, but we do ask that you reserve tickets. You can do that on our website, waltonartscenter.org, or call the box office. And then Seth will actually also be performing another show at 8 p.m.
Really?
That evening in the Starlight Jazz Club or in the Starlight Club. Seth's normal show that he performs is called Seth's Big Fat Broadway Show. And he basically, when he comes and does this, he will customize that for the 4:30 performance so that he will preview our season. But then at the 8 o'clock show, it's what he normally does. So he's very funny, very fast paced, and he basically knows everything about Broadway. So he will dissect all these little backstage things that are going on with Broadway. He's very funny. He plays clips. He takes a musical passage from an iconic song and breaks it down into how the singer did it. It's going to be quite fun. That's Saturday evening at 8 o'clock in Starlight Jazz Club. then one day off, Sunday, and then we'll have a university music concert on the 5th and 6th of March. On Wednesday, the university, I think it's the Distinguished Lecture Series, is bringing Elie Wiesel to Walton Arts Center. And I just learned how the tickets are going to work for that. There are no advance tickets for it, but the doors open at 6.
Okay.
And tickets will be distributed at the door. Then on the 8th, which is Thursday, we will have In the Heights, the Broadway musical written and created by the same creative team that brought us Bring It On a couple weeks ago. That's Thursday and Friday, the 8th and 9th. The Thursday show is at 7 p.m. The Friday show is at 8 p.m. And then Saturday, we will have the Symphony of Northwest Arkansas and the Fayetteville Jazz Collective playing their fourth concert of the season. That's at 7:30 p.m. There's a 6:45 creative conversation hosted by Kyle, who will be talking to Paul Haas, the music director. That's free and open to anybody who has a ticket to the show. This is going to be a really innovative performance where the symphony and the jazz collective are on stage together and they're weaving their music together. Pretty excited to hear what Paul Haas does with this, because this kind of experience is what he really loves to do.
That's always a surprise.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Always surprises with Paul, that's for sure. Skipping ahead a couple days, we have the Peking Acrobats here on Wednesday the 14th. That's a 7 p.m. performance. Those of you who remember a more snowy and icy winter last year will remember that Peking Acrobats were scheduled to perform here last year in February, I believe, and their show was snowed out. So we're very glad that they are coming back.
I have something to add to that. They have the world record for the highest human chair stack.
No kidding.
They really do.
I didn't know that. That's fantastic. I don't know. Like, I'm not sure how the actual show is going to play out, but the images and the publicity materials we have for them show that. I mean, they are 4, 5, 6 people tall just without chairs. So that's March 15th, and then that was March 14th. And then March 15th, we will have the next show in our 10x10 art series. It's the SF Jazz Collective from San Francisco, and they will be playing and interpreting and playing tribute to the music of Stevie Wonder, which so excited for that. That's a 7 p.m. performance on a Thursday. There will be a 6 p.m. creative conversation prior to it. We will have members of the band there as part of the conversation. This collective that exists in San Francisco, they basically all shut their own bands down for a month or 2 months and go out on tour and pay tribute to a great musician. And then we just wanted to let people know that there's a couple new shows that have gone on sale. Glenn Campbell and his Goodbye Tour, the first performance we booked of that, sold out within probably 2 weeks, or it's almost sold out right now. So we've been lucky enough to be able to get a second performance, which is wonderful because it means another 1,000 people can come see him. That performance will be on the 28th of April, and the tickets for that have actually gone on sale this morning.
Okay.
So if you missed getting seats for Glenn Campbell, you can visit with us today. Also, if you bought tickets to Glenn Campbell and you may want to switch to the Thursday night to the Saturday night show, you're welcome to do that. Box office will help you with that.
Okay.
And then we also, the Washington Regional Gala, their annual Eagle Awards Gala, will be happening on April 10th. They've announced that the artist is Foreigner, and that will go on sale to the public tomorrow morning. That's Friday at 9 a.m. So we also anticipate those going pretty quickly. So if you want to get tickets to that, you should check out our website, which is waltonartcenter.org, or you can call us at 443-5600, or you can stop by the box office and say hello to the ticketing reps who would love to talk to you.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Jody Beznoska is the Vice President of Communication at Walton Arts Center. This is Ozarks at Large. The first Tuesday of each month, the Music on the Mountain series features local musicians playing an intimate show inside Clapp Auditorium on the campus of the Mount Sequoia Conference and Retreat Center in Fayetteville. This coming Tuesday, singer-songwriter Marshall Mitchell will play. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums recently talked with Marshall Mitchell and the show manager for the series, Efron White.
Marshall Mitchell has played at many places during his lifetime. He's done the club and bar circuit all over as a member of different bands. He's played open mics at coffee houses. And with his music that he's written for a younger audience in mind, he's played schools and parks. Tuesday night, he'll perform at Clapp Auditorium, a venue he's never played before, but he has attended other shows there.
Oh, okay. Man, it is great. Went to see Kelly Mulholland. Was the first one this year that they had in Clapp Auditorium. The way they have that set up, when you walk in, I don't know about other people, but as a performing person, I felt at home. It was just like it just wrapped your arms around you, the way they have the curtain and the lights and the stage, and it's just kind of set up like a little amphitheater.
It's really a large auditorium, but to get these shows started and make it feel a little more intimate, we've kind of blocked off part of the auditorium, part of the way, so it doesn't. So as we build our crowd up, it'll feel like it's full,
yeah. Right.
And it has been pretty full up to where we have the curtains.
That second voice belongs to Efren White. He's the show manager for each of the Music on the Mountain concerts in 2012. The entire series is designed to not only showcase local talent, but raise money for the eventual renovation of Clapp Auditorium. Both Efren and Marshall came to KUAF this week to talk about Tuesday night's concert. I asked Marshall if he knew what he would play first Tuesday evening.
I don't. That's the hardest thing. That's always
really?
The hardest thing. Whenever I perform, okay, what am I going to do first? What shall I do first? And then it's kind of sort of like when you look out on the crowd, okay, there's grandmas and grandpas, there's moms and dads, there's kids out there. And then you just go. I just have a hard time staying with the list. I use it as a reference more than a, okay, we're going this one, then we're going this one, then we're going this one. So
that's what I do as well.
I think it works a whole lot better. It's more natural. And like I say, if they're not tuning in to, you know, I write a wide variety of styles. You just have to capture them. You know, or capture their imagination. I take it like a salt shaker because I always want to take them and turn them and return them and then leave them wanting more, saying, you know, I really had a really good time that night. And to be able to tune in on what they're feeling, you know, and then shuffle in my computer brain, you know, tick, 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 okay, that'll work, you know. And you probably have the same. I don't look at it as a problem, but you may have the same symptoms that I do that once you start the song and you see them smiling and going along and you go, hey, yeah, okay, I could do this next. By the end of the song, you're like, what was that?
Do you chat with the crowd?
Oh, sometimes too much.
Marshall's a real good chatter.
I'm the quiet shy type. No, I have no problem talking to folks. And, you know, it's that personal touch that if they take time to come and see you, then you should take time to get to know them, let them get to know you rather than I am the performer, you know, I am the one. To me, it's us that makes the party. And when I say party, it's not, you know, Animal House or Loud and
Rowdy,
but I mean it's the interaction.
Well, you know, at a real party, I am not the life of the party. I'm not a real good conversationalist, but when I get a guitar in my hand and I get to converse through my songs, well, I feel like a real party participator.
There you go.
And so you are of a shyer variety.
Yeah.
What's different for you, Marshall, when you have the guitar in your hand? If you are more extroverted, does something change?
No. It's just I get to sing instead of talk.
Well, do you mind performing right now?
I don't mind at all.
Well, please.
Okay. 2, 1. For Route 66. Summer sun went down. I saw a girl beside the highway with a sign said Santa Fe bound.
She looked hot and worn and dusty. Well, I stopped, I let her in. She said, thanks, and where are you headed? Well, I said to Phoenix, she said, thanks again. 66 to 2 Gum Carry. Long time since I've been this way. Let me out when you reach Klein's Corner, cause I'm headed to Santa Fe. Well, I knew she was exhausted, though she tried not to let on. But she finally drifted off to sleep just before we reached San Juan. Oh, when we got to Tucum Carry, we woke up and she looked around. And though she tried to hide it, I could tell that she was down. 66 to Tucum Carry, long time since I've been this way. Let me out when you reach Klein's Corner, cause I'm headed to Santa Fe. Yeah. Hey, 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 Lord. Hey, 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 Lord. Hey, 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 hey.
Yeah. Woo. Do you remember the first song you learned on guitar?
I do. And actually, it got me the job. My mom was an insurance clerk, worked with another lady, came home one day and said that her son played in a band, and they were looking for guitar players. You might ought to go talk to them. So I went across town and played this song for them and got the job. So the Wildwood Flower was... It may not have been the first song that I learned, because I took guitar lessons early on, but they wanted to show me techniques, you know, put your thumb like this and hold your hand. And it was like, hey, just show me the songs. I'll learn to play guitar. So my folks had 4 Johnny Cash albums. I learned Johnny Cash. And my mom still tells a story about coming in to my room and taking my guitar off of me, because I would go to sleep at night, you know, playing. And that's what people ask me, do you teach guitar? And it's like, I don't. But it's called motor memory. And once you learn to play, your mind can go somewhere else, because your fingers will know where to go.
Well, friends, family, strangers, all welcome Tuesday night.
That's right. By golly. Just haul off and come on down. You'll get to hear Efren talk.
And I don't talk much. So.
Thank you both for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Marshall Mitchell will play at Clapp Auditorium at Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville Tuesday night at 7. His website is marshallmitchell.com. Kyle also talked to the show manager for the Music on the Mountain series, Efren White. To hear more from the conversation, please visit ozarksatlarge.com. Support for KUAF comes from Dr. Charles A. White Periodontics and Dental Implants, a regional practice offering periodontal care to new and existing patients for over 25 years. Information regarding appointments and consultation, gum grafting, computer-guided dental implants, and minimally invasive laser therapy is available at drcawhite.com. And also, we are also supported by listener contributions and by Malco Theatres, offering avoidance of sold-out movies and waiting in line with online ticket sales. Advance tickets to neighborhood Malco Theatres available online at malco.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, Bella Vista. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Iti Agnihotri Mathulkar. Thanks for listening and have a great day.